Okay, today's daf is Baba Basra Daf Dalid. We are holding on Daf Gimel Amud Beis at the fifth wide line on Gimel Amud Beis. We are about to start the story of how Hordus rose to power. So we're going to tell that whole story of how Hordus rose to power and then ultimately redid the Beis HaMikdash and contributed to the building of a beautiful second Beis HaMikdash. Then the Gemara is going to discuss giving advice to Rishayim on how to do tshuva, both Bava ben Buta giving advice to Hordus on doing tshuva and Daniel giving advice to Nebuchadnezzar on how to do tshuva and why one of those things was the right thing to do and the other one was the wrong thing to do. Then the Gemara is going to go back to discussing the halachos of building a wall between two people's property, and it's going to talk about splitting the fallen building materials, even if one person has a chazakah on all of them. They all fell into his rishus, or he cleared them all into his rishus. Or the Gemara is going to talk about forcing to build a wall in a gina and a bika in a place that has no minhag. What is our Mishnah stance on that? The Mishnah was somewhat cryptic about where there is a minhag to build, not a minhag to build. What is the stance when it's a stam gina, stam bika, where there's no known minhag? No minhag yes, no minhag no. There's no known minhag at all. Then the Gemara is going to discuss details on how to make a chazis to prove who owns the wall, because the Mishnah had mentioned this idea of making a chazis so you can prove that you built the wall yourself and that the neighbor didn't contribute to the space or the material. And then on Amud Beis at the Mishnah is going to talk about a situation of a makif and a nikif, meaning that there's a person who owns property that surround another person's property. So at what point, when the makif, when the person that owns the surrounding property, and if he builds walls, at what point can he be mechayev the nikif, the surrounded, to help pay for those walls? Then the Gemara is going to have several explanations of what the machlokas is between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yossi about the nikif ultimately paying for those walls, because there's some sort of machlokas, but it's not abundantly clear from the Mishnah what that machlokas is. I should just announce on tomorrow Shabbos Sunday, I'm away for the weekend, and so is Alicia. So tomorrow Shabbos Sunday, there won't be a daf in shul. Daf Yomi keeps going, but so Be'ezrat Hashem Monday morning I'll be back to give the regular daf shir. Okay, so I'm sure online there's still plenty of daf shirim online. So says the Gemara, the fifth wide line on Daf Gimel Amud Beis, the story of Hordus. Hordus avdid the Beis Chashmonai. Have a Hordus was an eved from the Beis Chashmonai. Nasan ein of Boos Tinokas, and he had his eyes on a certain young woman from the Beis Chashmonai that he was that he wanted to marry. Yom Achad Shama Hu Gavra Baskala Da Amar. One day Hordus overheard a baskal that had said Kol avdid the Marid Hashta Mitzlach, that any eved that goes and rebels against his master today is going to be Matzliach. So he figured that was his opportunity. Come katlinu l'kulu maruse. He went and he killed out the entire household of the Beis Chashmonai, of his masters, v'shayri lehinu kasa, and he left over just that one young lady that he had intended to marry. The Ramban in Bereishis Perek Mem Tes explains the reason the Beis Chashmonai were punished like this, even though they were chassidei elyon and ilmaleihem nishtakhu haTorah vaMitzvos miYisrael. Had it not been for the Beis Chashmonai, then Torah and Mitzvos would have been gone. We celebrate them every Chanukah, because as the Ramban says, nevertheless they were punished in this way that Hordus was able to wipe them all out, because the Pasuk says Lo Yasur Shevet Mi Yehuda, that the Malchus has to belong to Yehuda. The Chashmonaim, who were the Malachim, were not from Yehuda and David, and they were Meisir Shevet and Mechokek Mi Yehuda, so they were punished Mida Keneged Mida, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed Avadim to rule over them and to cut them off to be Machris their Malchus. So could be that they sinned by taking the Malchus, because they were Kohanim and they should have been watching over the Kohuna La'avodah Shel Beis HaMikdash and the Mizbeach, and they shouldn't have taken over the Malchus. That is the stance of the Ramban. It's a Machlokas Ramban and Rambam, whether we look askance at the idea that the Chashmonaim decided to take the Malchus. So what happened? Hordus killed them all out except for this one young lady. Ki Chazis Hayinu Kasa the Kabbalah Lemin. When that young woman realized that the reason she was left alive is because he wanted to marry her, Slika the Igra, she went up to the roof, Verama Kala, and she raised her voice in Amra and she screamed, Kol Manda Asiva Amar, Mi Beis Chashmonai Kasina. Anyone who comes from this point forward and claims that they come from the Beis Chashmonai,
avdahu. You should know that such a person is nothing but an eved. Because the only remaining survivor of the Beis Chashmonai is me, and I am about to plunge to my death, and therefore there will be no one left from the Beis Chashmonai. And that's what she did. She committed suicide. The Iyun Yaakov explains, isn't this a violation of Ma'avir Atzmo L'das? One is not allowed to commit suicide. So he says it's not a violation of Ma'avir Atzmo L'das because she did it since she was a Bas Kohen and she didn't want to be Mischalel by marrying an Eved who killed the entire Mishpacha. And the Shulchan Aruch writes in Yardes and Shin Mem Hei Sif Gimel that someone who's an Anus is not considered Ma'avir Atzmo L'das. And the Shulchan Aruch says, like Shaul HaMelech, who killed himself so that the Plishtim would not kill him. So this is a major topic. At what point can you say that one is allowed to be Ma'avir Atzmo L'das in order to avoid what? In order to avoid humiliation? In order to avoid pain? In order to avoid the enemy getting the upper hand and being able to say that they're the ones that did it, so Chil Hashem? But something like that. Shaul was willing to commit suicide because he didn't want the Plishtim to kill him. It's unclear exactly how Shaul's end came about. You sort of get two different stories in the Navi, that he asked his helper to kill him, but then Anara Maleki took credit for killing him. It could be that that Shaul's helper tried to kill him and it didn't work, and or Shaul fell on his own sword and it didn't work, and then the Anara Maleki came and finished the job. But be that as it may, Shaul at least wanted to commit suicide, and apparently that was justified. So Tamna Sheva Shnin Bedufsha. So now that she was dead, what was Hordas going to do with her? He preserved her body for 7 years in honey. Ikad Amri Ba'aleha, Ikad Amri Lo Ba'aleha. And some say that he slept with her, and some say that he did not sleep with her. Which the Maral writes that it doesn't mean Mamish Ba'aleha, because that's even for Hordas, that would be a very, very odd thing to do. It means that because he loved her, he wanted to preserve her. So he preserved her in honey, and since it was all for the purpose of his Yetzer Hara that he did that, it's considered ki'ilu he was ba'aleha. The Tosus in Yavama seems to assume not that way. Tosus in Yavama seems to assume that ba'aleha means ba'aleha mamish. So the two deos, whether he was ba'aleha or not, the one that says that he was ba'aleha, he preserved her in order to satisfy his yetzer hara, so he could be ba'al her. And the ones that say that he wasn't ba'al her, well then why was he preserving her if he wasn't going to be ba'al her, wasn't going to satisfy his yetzer hara anyway, was to enhance his reputation, that everyone will say that he's married to a bas melech, because look, he's walking around with a princess. Amar man darish mikarev echecha tasim alecha melech rabbanan. So he started to do a cheshbon. He said, who's the one that said, mikarev echecha tasim alecha melech, that darshined, that you can only appoint a melech from kerev echecha, mikarev echecha, and you can't appoint an eved to be a melech, that I am an unfit king? The rabbanan are the ones that darshined that. So kam katlinu l'kulu rabbanan. He got up and he killed all of the rabbanan. The Iyun Yaakov explains that before the young woman committed suicide, he thought that he would be able to marry her, and that since in Jewish law the yichus of the child is after the mother in terms of whether the child is a Jew or not, he thought that that child would be considered ra'i l'malchus, and therefore that his descendants would be ra'i l'malchus. But since he saw that Yisraelios are not interested in marrying avadim to the extent that she was willing to commit suicide, so his children are never going to be ra'i l'malchus, that's when he got very angry. And he decided to kill out all of the Rabbanan. So he got angry at the Rabbanan. He wanted to kill them all out. So he killed them all out except for Shavke Lebaba ben Buta leMishkal Eitz Mineh. He left Baba ben Buta alive because he needed a wise person to get advice from. So he allowed Baba ben Buta to live. But even though he allowed him to live, Ahadrele Kalile Daili, Nakrinule Ine, he made a crown, a porcupine crown, and inverted, put it around Baba ben Buta's eyes to poke out his eyes and blind Baba ben Buta. They say in some of the Achronim that Baba ben Buta, I think one of the other Amoraim that was blind, Rav Chia or Rav Sheshas, there was a Gilgal of Rav Chia or Rav Sheshas, something like that, that the Baba ben Buta was Niskalgal Rav Sheshes, he came back in the form of Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes was also blind. Whatever it is, Bava Ben Buta became blind at the end of his life. Yom Echad, Asav not became blind, he was blinded by Hurdus. Yom Echad, Asav Yasav Kameh. One day he came and he sat in front of him, meaning Hurdus in disguise, well, disguising his voice, I guess, came in front of Bava Ben Buta to try to test him and to see how loyal Bava Ben Buta would be to him. Amar, so Hurdus says to him, Chazi mar hai avdabisha mai kavid, you see what this horrible Eved has done? Look what he's done to you, he's blinded you. Amalei, maya avidai. So Bava Ben Buta says, what do you want me to do for him? To do to him, I'm not going to do. Amalei, nilat yimar. He says, I'll tell you what you could do. You can curse him. That's what you should do. Amalei, ksiv, gam b'madach, melech al tekalel. That you're not allowed to curse a melech, so I can't curse him. Amalei, hai lav melechu. So again, Hurdus, acting as if he were somebody else, says, no, he's not really a melech. Amalei v'lahavi asher bi'alma. Even if he was just a rich guy, uksiv u'b'chedre mishkavcha al t'kalel asher, that even in the privacy of your own home, where no one will hear about it, you're not allowed to curse an asher. V'lo yehei l'nasi. Even if he was just a nasi, uksiv v'nasi ba'am chalo sa'or. You're not allowed to curse a nasi either. So Amalei, so Hurdus said, yeah, but that's ba'osa ma'isa'amcha. V'hai lav osa ma'isa'amcha. That's only if the person behaves, if the person acts like a proper Jew. But this fellow Hurdus is certainly not acting like a proper Jew. He killed out every single rabbi. Amalei mistafina minei. He said, well, I'm afraid of him. I don't want to curse him. I'm afraid of the repercussions of that. He certainly has been flexing his muscles recently. I'm not interested in finding out what he's going to do when he discovers that I haven't been loyal to him. Amalei leke inish to azil delay malei. So Hurdus said, well, there's going to be no one that will go tell him. Don't worry about it. He's never going to find out. So danova atyasiv, and it's just me and you sitting over here. Amalei ksiv ki of hashamayim yolech hasakol. He said, well, you know that what they say, that the pasuk says that there's a little birdie that told me that a bird of the sky is going to go and let it be known that you'll have a bird that will be able to repeat whatever is said, meaning that you can never really be sure that nobody is listening. You know, the walls have ears, so you got to be very careful about what you say, even if you think you're saying it totally privately. Balkanafayim yagadavar, the winged creature will go and tell everything. Amalei anahu. So now Hurdus decides to reveal his identity. He says, it was me the whole time. If I would have known that the Rabbanan are so careful, I would not have killed them. What exactly does he mean by that? If I would have known the Rabbanan are so careful? Careful about what? So one possibility is, if I would have known that the Rabbanan are so respectful of the Malchus, that they would never curse the Malchus, even though I happen to be an Eved and I'm not a Melch. So the whole reason I killed them was because they're the ones that go around teaching that it's got to only be Mikarev HaChachas. I thought they would never respect the institution of Malchus, as long as I'm holding it, as long as an Eved has it. Now I see that even with an Eved as the Melech, they won't curse, they won't, because of Melech, and even if he were just a Nasi, and even if he were just a Nashir. So I realized that my whole Cheshbon was wrong, because I thought that they wouldn't respect me as a Melech. But now I see that they do respect me as a Melech. Or alternatively, possibly he meant, if I would have known that the Rabbanan are so careful with the way that they speak, and how dignified they are, then I wouldn't have killed them. But Pasha is like the first way, that he was only interested in himself. Rav Elchanan points out in Kovit Shurim, you know, where he says, that where Hurdus said, don't worry, he's not a melech anyway, so you can curse him. Rav Elchanan points out, it sounds from here that the idea of Mikar V'chachatasim Alech Melech is even li'ikuva, meaning even b'di'evet, he doesn't have a din of a melech, because that was exactly what Hurdus's argument was. Don't worry, you can curse him, because he doesn't have a din of a melech. And the response was not, yes, he does. The response was, okay, but even if he was just a rich guy or just a nasi, I still wouldn't be allowed to curse him. So it sounds like it's even li'ikuva that he does not have a din of a melech. Problem is, in Ksubas Daf Yud Zayin, it doesn't sound that way. Because the Gemara over there says that Agrippas HaMelech was passing by at the same time that there was Achnasas Kala, and even though the din is that a mace and a Kala are over Milifnei Melech Yisrael, and the Chamim, and he allowed the Kala to go first, and the Chamim were Meshabeachim about this. So the Gemara says, sounds like he did a good thing, But a melech shemachal kavodo ain kavodo machal. A melech whose mochal is kavod, his kavod is not machal. So how could it be that Agrippas was mochal on his kavod? And the Chum said, great idea, that was wonderful that you were mochal on the kavod. So Tosav there asks, Agrippas wasn't really a melech. The Gemara says in Sotah Mem Aleph that he wasn't really mikarev achecha. So Tosav suggests that nevertheless they treated him like a melech gamur. So Pashtus, what Tosav means is that originally they were asking that he's not a melech gamur because of the din of mikarev achecha, and the answer was but they treated him that way anyway, b'di'evet, meaning really lechadchila you're not allowed to have a person like Agrippas be the melech, but b'di'evet, once he's there he has a full din of a melech, and that's why the Gemara discusses him as if he is a melech. So I asked Rav Elchanan, if that's pshat in Tosfos, that seems to be against our sugya, because in our Gemara it sounds like Hordus does not have a din of a melech, yet over there it sounds like lechadchila you're not allowed to appoint the Agrippases and Hordases of the world, but if you do, then they do have a din of a melech. So Rav Elchanan suggests that maybe there's another reason why he's not a melech, and that's because even if he was mikarev achecha, he took the melucha bezroa. Even a melech goy has a din melech if he takes a bezroa, because the reason a melech goy would have a din of a melech even when he forcefully, there's an uprising and he forcefully takes the malchus, it's because through that uprising he's kona the land. The malchus is based on the ownership of the land, whereas a melech Yisrael is not based on the ownership of the land, because every Jew has dalet amos in Eretz Yisrael. That's the famous Ran in Nedarim, that the Ran writes that there's no din of the malchus adina in Eretz Yisrael, because din of the malchus adina is based on the melech's ownership of the land, and every Jew owns land in Eretz Yisrael. The melech doesn't own the land in Eretz Yisrael. So when it comes to Malchi Umos HaOlam, they can acquire the land with a forceful uprising. It becomes theirs. So the Umos HaOlam, by taking it with force, become a melech in other lands. But in Eretz Yisrael, it doesn't work that way. With someone who takes it bizroa, that's what invalidates the malchus. So the Chan says something unbelievable. You could have someone who's not mikarev achecha, and he'll have a din of a melech as long as there is a minui melech, as long as the people accept him as a melech. But if it's a forceful uprising, that he won't become the melech. It doesn't work for him to become the melech, and that's why Hordus was not a valid melech. So that's what happened with Hordus. Anyway, so he feels bad about killing all the rabbis. So hashta maitakante deu gabra. So he says to Bava Ben Buta, how do I do tshuva for this? I feel terrible. I killed all the rabbanon. How does one do tshuva for killing every rabbi on earth? Amalei, who kava oro shalolam? Well, you extinguish the light of the world. D'chsiv ki ner mitzvah v'torah or, that Torah is light. Yelech v'yasok ba'oro shalolam. So you need to go and engage in rebuilding the light of the world. D'chsiv inorol of kol agoyim. And that's the base of Mikdash. Igadamri hachi amalei. Some say he said to him a little differently. Hu simei eino shalolam. He blinded the eyes of the world. D'chsiv aya imei eine eida yelech. That the Talmid Chacham are called the Einei HaEda. So what should he do? Yelech v'yisasek be'eino shel olam. He should go and be involved in the eyes of the world. D'chsiv hini mechalas mikdashi go'onuzchem machmad einechem. The Marsha explains that you can have such a thing as light without eyes and eyes without light, right? You have a person who's able to see, but it's nighttime, so he has eyes, but there's no light. You can have the opposite. You have a blind person during the daytime. You have light, but you don't have eyes with which to see. But over here, it was both of them. There was Heder HaTorah. The Torah is the R. The Talmid Chacham are the Einayim with which to see the Or. So these two Lashonos are disagreeing about which point was the point of emphasis that he was saying. That you extinguish the Or being the Torah, meaning by getting rid of Talmid Chacham, now there's no more Torah in the world, or that you extinguish the Einayim, that the Torah is always there, it's just there are no Einayim with which to see the Torah, because the Talmid Chacham are called the Einei HaEda. So he was talking to him on one of those two levels. So anyway, so he said, you should rebuild the base of Mikdash. Amalei mistafina mimalchusa. He said, I'm afraid of the Malchus. When they get wind of the fact that I'm rebuilding a base of Mikdash, they're going to be very upset at me. So he was still kafaf Rashi says to the Romans. So even though he was a melech in his own mind and he took over the Malchus in Eretz Yisrael, he still had to answer to the Romans. He had people higher up on the ladder to answer to. Amalei shadashli chavalezel shasa, v'liakav shasa, v'lahadash shasa, He says, I have an idea. Send a message to them as if you're asking them for rishus, but the shliach that you send should take a year to get there. Let him stay there for a year once he gets there. Then he'll come back. It will take him another year to get back. And in those 3 years, you'll have finished the entire construction project. Start right now as you send the shliach. And that way, you will have gone through the formality of asking permission to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. So you're not doing anything behind their backs. But regardless of what they say, it will be done by the time the shliach gets back. Avarachi, so he did that. Shalchulei, and the message they sent back to him that he received 3 years later was, Im lo sesarta al tistar. If you have not yet destroyed anything, then do not destroy it. Vim satarta al tivni. If you did destroy it, do not rebuild it. Vim satarta ubanisa. If you've already destroyed it and rebuild it, then avdi bisha basar da avdin mismalchin. That you're an eved and you decided to make yourself into a king. Im zayan chalach. You may have all of your weapons. Sifr chakan. We have your sefer yichus. Lo racha v'lo bar racha. You are not a king, nor do you descend from kings. Hordus avda klan yamis avid. You're a lowly chutzpedik servant. My racha, what does racha mean? Malchusa means a melech. They were telling him, you're not a melech nor the son of a melech. How do I know racha means a melech? Tichsiv, anokhe ayom rach u'mashuach melech. That I am today a rach and mashuach melech. Marsha says, how do you know that means that racha means king? Maybe he's just saying, I'm young and I'm being appointed the king. That's all he's saying. This is David HaMelech. So the Marsha says, because he wasn't so young, meaning by Shlomo it says, B'nei Na'ar Rach, because he was Rach B'shanim, he was less than 12 years old. David, who was more than 30 years old, you don't say that he was a Rach B'shanim. He was just so clearly, Rach is another word for Malchus over there. V'yibayisem mehach, v'yikru lefan of Avreich, that they said about him Avreich. So what is Avreich? Avreich is Lashon of Malchus, about Yosef, when they appointed him to be to a position of royalty. Amri Misha Lora Binyan Hordus, Lora Binyan Na'a Miyamav. Anyone who was not Zocha to see the Binyan of Hordus has never seen a beautiful building in his life. B'may Banya, what did he build the Beis HaMikdash with? Amar Rabba Ba'avni Shisha Umirmara. He built it with different types of beautiful marble. Igada Amri Ba'avni Kuchla Shisha Umirmara. That he built it with blue and white marble. Afik Safa Va'il Safa. And it wasn't straight edged stones. The stones went in and out a little bit. Kiechid in the Kabbal Sida, so that they could be cemented together. Savil Mishia B'dahava. And he wanted to line it with gold. Amalei Rabban Shafke. Dahachi Shapir Tvei. Demechsi Kiad Vasa Diyama. Leave it like this. It's much nicer this way without the gold because it looks like the sea. It looks like the ocean. What's so great about looking like the ocean? So the Marsha explains, based on the well-known Gemara Menachos Mem Gimel, Manishtana Tcheles Mikol Minei Tzivonin. Why is it that Tcheles is chosen amongst all the colors to put in our tzitzis? Meisha Tcheles Domel Yam, V'Yam Domel Rikia, V'Rikia L'Kisei HaKavod. Meaning, if you're going to have a Beis HaMikdash, and Beis HaMikdash is a place where we encounter the Shechina, you want that which reminds you of the Shechina. Nothing reminds you of the Shechina. No color reminds you of the Shechina more than the color of Tcheles, because the Tcheles is Domel Yam. There's a Ramban in Bamidbar Perek Tes Vav, when we talk about Tcheles, the Ramban goes through what's so special about the color of Tcheles in particular. And the Ramban says that when you're looking at infinity, when you're looking beyond where the eye can see, no matter you're looking at the horizon, all you see is Tcheles. No matter what color is actually there, the color that your eye is able to see when you're looking at a great distance is always the color of Tcheles. So he says Tcheles is an encounter, it represents the encounter with the infinite. Rabbeinu Bechai in Shemos Perachav Ches explains that's why Yisachar, the Yeven of the Choshen that represents Yisachar, is the Yeven of Tcheles, because Yisachar is Torah, and he who engages with the infinite, with Torah, which is the ultimate Chachma, is connecting to Tcheles. And he says Tcheles is a color that is not a Tseva Shel Gaiva, like red or green. He identifies as colors of Gaiva. Tcheles is a uniquely Jewish color that represents a sense of anivus, because anivus, and it fits very nicely, anivus is the sense that a person is so small when you take into account just how big the Shechina is, how big HaKadosh Baruch Hu is that you're encountering. So anyway, so that's why they decided, no gold, make it look like the ocean. Asking, how could Baba Ben Buta be giving advice to Hordas how to do tshuva. Why was Daniel punished? Daniel was punished because he gave advice to Nebuchadnezzar. Shnemar lahen malka malchi yashvar alech v'chateich b'tzdaka prok v'visicha b'meichan anyan hein tavi archa l'shalvaseich. That if you want to extend your period of tranquility and of malchus, he tells Nebuchadnezzar, the way to be mechaber for yourself is take care of aniyim, is to give a lot of tzedakah. So he was giving him advice, and therefore Nebuchadnezzar's reign was able to extend a little bit further because of that. Uksiv kula mata al Nebuchadnezzar malka. Uksiv l'ksas yarchin treyasar. That 12 more months Nebuchadnezzar got because of listening to that advice. So how was it that, so we know Daniel did something terrible by giving advice to Nebuchadnezzar, but we're not asking on Daniel. Some of the Achronim point out we're not asking on Daniel because we only know that it's Usher once we saw what happened to Daniel. Once we saw that Daniel, we'll see what exactly the punishment was, but once we saw that what happened to Daniel, that's when we know that it was Usher. Before that, we have no way of knowing that it was Usher. But Bab Bebuta should have known better. Why is he advising Hordas? He knows what happened to Daniel. So, different possibilities. One possibility is an Eved is different, because an Eved is Chayiv in Mitzvos. Hordas was not a guy, he was an Eved. And an Eved is Chayiv in Mitzvos Ki Isha, and therefore maybe he should not be closed off to the possibility of tshuva. So others say, no, the difference is that Beis HaMikdash, because without the Malchus, the Beis HaMikdash will not be rebuilt, meaning you need a Melech in order to build the Beis HaMikdash. Not abundantly clear why that's the case, why a Melech is necessary to build a Beis HaMikdash, but that's the assumption. That's why the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that there are three stages to Geula, that when Klal Yisrael goes back into Eretz Yisrael, there are three stages: Lahamidla Melech, Lahachrasaru Shalamalek, and Livnoslam Besa Bechira. So we normally think, why do you need Lahamidla Melech before the other two? Because you can't have Lachrasaru Shalamalek unless you have a Melech to wipe out Amalek. And we think, okay, but the Besa Migdash is just, that's the next step after we get rid of our enemies. But you don't need a Melech in order to have, you don't need step one in order to have step three, but you see over here you do. That Lahamidla Melech is not just a preparation Lahachrasaru Shalamalek. Lahamidla Melech is also a preparation Livnosan Beis HaBechira. You can't have a Beis HaBechira without a Melech first. That it's important to have a Melech in order to have a Beis HaMikdash. That such a building has to be built by someone as powerful as a Melech. V'Daniel minalan diyanish. How do we know that Daniel was ultimately punished? Ilei mishum duchsiv atikrasu laseich. If it's because the pasuk says that Esther called Haseich, va'amar Rav Haseich zeh Daniel, and Rav says Haseich is Daniel, well hanich leman yamar shechadchu migdulaso, that makes sense if you call him Haseich because he was cut off from his position of authority, from his high position in the government. So I understand that's a punishment. So you see that Daniel was ultimately punished. Alman yamar shkoldevir malchus nechtachan al piv. But if you say Haseich was actually a name that connotes power, that says that he was such an influential person that whatever he said was the final decision, well then Ma'ika Lemeimar, then what was the punishment that Daniel got? So says Gemara, what was the punishment Daniel got? We know about what happened to Daniel. The Shadul Guvadar Yavasa. He was thrown into a lion's den. So that's a pretty bad punishment, that he suffered the anxiety of being thrown into a lion's den. So that was the punishment of Daniel for giving advice to Nebuchadnezzar. And therefore, we see that one is not supposed to give advice to a Rasha on how to do tshuva. Hakol Kaminaga Medina. So the Mishnah gone on to say that even though there are all different types of stones on how to build a wall, you follow the Minaga Medina. Hakol Asuyemai, what's the word Hakol coming to include? Even if the Minaga is not any of the types of stones that we identified in the Mishnah, but rather just some cheap Hutz of Adafna, some cheap branches, and that's what people build their fences out of. So you can use that for, if they may build out of bamboo, that's a type of fencing that someone was asking me before Sukkot time this year, that you can get in like Home Depot or Lowe's. You get these big bamboo mats for like $80 or something. You get like these that can cover a giant sukkah because they sell them for fencing. They're like, it's the cheapest kind of fencing. So, okay, it's an interesting discussion whether it could be used for schach. The CRC has a whole list of which ones yes, which ones no. They have every year they come out with how to get cheap schach. So anyway, so behutza v'dafna, that's the cheapest type of fence. If that's the minhag, so you do that. L'fichach, im nafla kosel, hamakom ravanim shal shem. So the Mishnah said that since both the sides are obligated to pay for the wall, and both sides are obligated to contribute space for the wall, if it falls down, they split the space that it was on, and they split the building materials. So pshita, isn't that obvious that they would split the space and the building materials? They both paid for it. So of course, you don't need the Mishnah to tell me that they would split it. So says, now the case is, it fell into one person's rishus. It fell all into one side of the property. Or maybe one person brought it all into his rishus. So since this material is under dispute, one might say that Amotzi Mechaveru Alav Araya, whoever is muchzak in it gets to keep it. Therefore, Mishnah says, no, since we know the halacha is when you build a wall that both sides have to pay for the wall, current politics notwithstanding, that when a wall is built, both sides are obligated to pay for a wall. So therefore, when it falls down, it's understood that both sides are going to equally split the building material. V'chein begina. Makom shnagu ligdor mechayven oso. By begina as well, if there's a place to, if it's a place where the minig is to build a wall, you're mechayv, you could be mechayv a neighbor to build a wall in the garden as well. So frekting mar haguf akasha. There's a stira minei ubei. Amrit v'chein begina makom shnagu ligdor mechayven oso. It sounds like at first that if your garden is in a location where the minig is to build walls and gardens, then you can force a neighbor to build. Hastama, but if there is no known minhag, ein mechayvena, so you cannot force the neighbor to build. But then ein seifa, the seifa goes on to say, aval bika makom shenagu shelo ligdar, ein mechayvena, so if there's a known minhag not to build, then you can't be mechayvim to build. Hastama, mechayvena, so sounds like minastam, we can be mechayvim to build. Hashta stam gina amrit lo. Stam bika mibai. So if a stam gina, we say in the Mishnah, you don't have to, you can't force to build. So stam bika, you should be allowed to force the other guy to build. Adaraba, gina is much more of a reason to build than by a bika. There's ayin harabai, a gina constantly, 365 days a year by a bika. It's only during the harvesting season. So why would you think that, why would the Mishnah tell me the opposite of what's logical? So amrabai hachi kamar. No, Abai says what it means to say is as follows. V'chein stam gina, period. A stam gina is like a makom shana has the same status as a chatzer. And then the words makom shnagu ligdar go on the bika. Ube makom shnagu ligdar bibika mechayvin oso. So you just got to put the comma in a different spot. So amalei rava imkein mai aval. But wait, after the words makom shnagu ligdar, it says aval bibika. If the words makom shnagu ligdar were going on the bika, why is there a transition word after the words makom shnagu ligdar? That doesn't make sense. You can't switch the comma. Ella amar Rava, rather Rava says, hachi katani. Here's how you read the Mishnah. V'chein stam gina ki makom shnagu ligdar dami. A stam gina is not, when the Mishnah is not saying that a stam gina in a place where you know that there's a minhag to build, then you build. It's saying that every stam gina is treated as if the minhag is to build, and therefore you can force the neighbor to build if you don't know of any minhag. Umechayvin also, you could be mechayvin. Aval stam bika kemakom shalona gudami vein mechayvin also. A stam bika is treated as a place that there is that there's not a minhag to build, and therefore you cannot be mechayvin. And therefore the Mishnah is not at all counterintuitive. It works out very logically that whenever there is a known minhag, of course you follow the known minhag. If there's no known minhag, so if it's a gina, assume the minhag is to build. If it's a bika, assume the minhag is not to build. So the Mishnah had said, if you want, what you do, if it's a place where there's no minhag to build, so you can't force the other guy to build, so you can always build a fence, you just have to put it all in your property, you pay for the entire thing, and you should make some sort of siman on the fence so that in the future people will realize that it's all on your property and that you paid for the whole thing, so there won't be any dispute about the ownership of that fence. So my chazis, what kind of siman do you make on the fence? Amar Rav Huna, akvile lekarna levar. You put wider bricks on the top and you have them protrude out into the other side, on the outside, into the neighbor who did not pay for it, into his property. Vinavin milagav, why don't you have it protrude out toward your property? So because avid chavri nami milavar, because then the neighbor can do the same thing on his side and he'll claim that he also paid for the wall. Va'amr di dividideihu, and he'll say it belongs to both of us. But if you make thicker bricks that go protrude into his side, he could just chop them down. He could just trim those bricks and still claim joint ownership of the wall. So says Gemara, Gizuza made yadia. If he trimmed down the bricks, you would be able to see that. It would be obvious. Another version of what Rav Huna says is Michva lekarna milagav, that he should actually move the bricks into his side. Vinav milavar, why not on the other side? Guy is lechavre, because the neighbor will cut them down, will trim them down. Varmadi dividideu, and claim joint ownership. Iach, if that's the case, hashtanami laif lechavre. Well, right now, can't he just add to his side? Varmadi dividideu, and claim that it belongs to both of them? No, lifufa media dia. If you add to a wall after it was originally built, it will be obvious that that was an addition to the wall. It wasn't part of the original wall. Vami bachutz katani. But wait, according to this Igad Amri, you're adding the simen on your own side. Well, then why does the Mishnah say mi bachutz, that you put the simen on the outside? It's not at all the outside. It's actually on the inside. So kasha, that's taka difficulty according to this lashon. You got to therefore go with the first lashon. Rabbi Yochanan Amar nishaye ba'amsa milavar, that you rub cement on the top amma of the wall on the outside. Why not line it with cement on the inside? Avid chavri milavar, because then the neighbor will do it on his side. Rami di divi didayu, and claim joint ownership. Iachi ashenami the kavale chavri. Well, right now, if you put cement on the outside, shouldn't you be concerned that he'll wipe it all off? Amar di divi didayu, and claim that it belongs to him as well. Kilufa made the idea. No, you'll be able to tell if he tampered it with it in that way. Hutsa, what if you have a fence made out of branches? So you can't, there's no cementing or whatever. How do you make a simen on that? So Amar Rav Nachman, sinufe yarichi milavar, that you bend the branches, the tops of the branches, to the outside. Vinevan milagav, why don't you bend them toward the inside? Avinami chavri milavar, because on the other side, your neighbor will be doing the same thing. Varmer didivi didayu, and he'll claim that he owns it as well. Iachi hashanami, gai is vishadilei. Well, if you bend it toward the outside, he'll just trim down whatever you put toward the outside, toward his side, and he'll throw it out. Varmer didivi didayu, and he'll still claim joint ownership. So the Gemara says, Mishrik leitina, you put some sort of mud or cement on it that it's not easy to trim off. Hashami asi chaviv a kalif lekilufa. Well, he could peel off whatever cement you put there. Made the idea that would be known if he tampered with it in that way. Abaya amr hutza lesle takanta elu b'shtara. Then no, there's no simen to make on a fence made out of hutza. If the fence is made out of hutza, you need to just write a shtar meikara that says that you are the owner of the fence, so that you will never have any arguments about it in the future. Aval imasu midas shneihem. So the Mishnah went on to say that if they both build a wall, then they should make a simen on both sides of the wall. Meaning, if it's a place where the minhag is not to build a wall, and they both decide that they want to build a wall, so then they make a simen on both sides, and if it falls, it belongs to both of them. So Amar le Ravim miparzika le Ravashi lo yasu loze veloze. Why do you make simanim on both sides? Just don't make any simen at all on either side, and then it will also be split. Amar le l'tzricha dekav minchad minayu va'avet didei. No, one guy already did it. So vilo avet chavri amar didehu. And if the other guy doesn't make an equal simen, then the first one is going to claim that it's his. So says Rav Tana Takanta Ramai, the Mishnah is just talking about a stam case, is about a case where someone deceitfully went and put a simen where it doesn't belong. So Takanta Ramai Kamashman is telling me how to deal with such a deceitful person. Amalei Vareisha Lav Takanta Ramai, what any simen that we're making is all to deal with someone who's a deceitful person who's going to try to claim something that's not his. Amalei Bishlam Vareisha Tana Dina Mishum Dina Tana Takanta. Now the Reisha makes sense. The Reisha is telling us a halacha about building the fence and when you can and cannot force. So once it tells us that halacha, it tells us the takana about how to deal with any potential dishonesty. El seifa dina katani de katani takanta. But the seifa is not teaching us any din. It's just saying when they both agree to build a fence, obviously they're going to build a fence if they both agree to build a fence. So why does it have to add this takana? There's no din. So why would it add this takana of putting a simon on both sides? Amravina hachu behutzi askinan lafuki midabaye. Now it's talking about a fence made out of hutza, made out of branches, and we're trying to say, unlike Abaye, Damar Hutza Lesay Takanta, Elabishtara, who thinks that the only way to misak an offense made out of Hutza is with a shtar, the only way to make sure that there's no dishonesty is with a shtar, Kamashmulan de Bechazasagya. So that's what's coming to teach us, that with a Hutza offense, there is a Chiddush Ladina in the Mishnah, and that is that you can have a Chazis on a fence that's made out of
Hutza. Okay, we'll stop there again. I'm away tomorrow, Shabbos and Sunday, but we'll continue the shiur on Monday morning. Elisha's away this weekend as well. So.